founded by iTelligence, a global IT consultant dedicated to making technology work for everyone in the company. Information available at iTelligenceGroup.com. Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanford. Governor Jesse Ventura has said he wants to end the shell game of tax funding for state schools. And this weekend, he proposed a sweeping tax reform that would move the bill for local schools from property taxes to the state. If enacted, the move would rival the last big shift of tax reform that many still refer to as the Minnesota miracle. Governor Ventura would like to enact his own miracles, including even more tax reform. The question is, when it comes to the legislative session, will he stand alone? Would more state funds mean even more state control of local school districts? There's lots of questions, and the governor and his staff have said the plan is far from fully formed at this moment. We'll take your calls on tax reform and take a minute to talk to the governor about his new book, Do I Stand Alone? Going to the Mat Against Political Pawns and Media Jackals. Governor Ventura joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Hi, Catherine. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm glad to have you here.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, how would you like to change the way that schools K through 12 in Minnesota are funded?
Well, we just want to eliminate the shell game, and we're going to look at this. It's not written in stone. This is just something that myself and my commissioners, we've had meetings on, and I have four probably of my top commissioners, Commissioner Smith of Revenue, Commissioner Wheelock of Finance, Commissioner Jacks of Children, Families, and Learning, and one or two more if they're involved in on it. Because right now the state funds 70% anyway. And the point being is that it'll make a clear distinction of accountability. Because if the state takes over full funding of public schools, then any funding that would appear, any school funding that would appear on your local property tax statement from that point on would be the result of your local school board. So you could then hold them accountable for any additional funding, because you would know exactly what you get from the state. It would not be on your, nothing would be on your property tax form, and so any school funding that did show up on that form would be the right of, would be there because of local levies and whatever the local school board did. And I want to debunk this, that this would somehow take away the power of the local school boards. It'll do nothing of the such. It won't take away their power at all.
Before we get to that question of power, let's talk about cash. We're talking a large amount of money.
$900 million, right.
All right. So right. Where do we come up with that?
Well, and it doesn't mean an increase in taxes. Let's be clear on that, because if your property taxes drop, what it means is a shifting of taxes, that it would be picked up someplace else, and that's what we're looking to do. I don't have specifics yet. This is just what we're looking to do. We're going to look at where would we pick up these taxes. What would be the most equitable and fair way to do it if we went that route?
Yeah, you've said that there won't be an increase in taxes. Will there
No.
be any sort of decrease in taxes? Will this move mean a cut in taxes?
No, probably not that either. It's just a shifting in how we are going to pay for education.
So what you're saying
It'll
to citizens, I just want to make sure
okay.
I understand it, is that their tax bill won't necessarily change, but who they're writing, you know, what division gets it will change.
It could be a change off the property tax rolls into sales tax. It could go into income. It'll go into the regular revenue stream that the state already has, as opposed to the property tax system. It's getting it, basically, what the simplified thing is, it's getting it off your property taxes. The state already funds 70%, so it'd be 30 more additional percent that the state would pick up, and then full per pupil funding would be paid for by the state of Minnesota, and it would clearly divide the two. Then, if you, as I said earlier, if you got your property tax statement later and there were any school funding on it, you would know that was the result of your local school board, which makes them accountable. They ought to be accountable. I mean, if they're going to advocate for a bonding or a local referendum or local taxes to be paid, then they should be held accountable for those local taxes to be paid.
You don't think they're held accountable now?
I think that it's very difficult. They probably are if you want to really dive into it, but it's not simple. This way it'll be simple. you'll know that nothing will appear on your local property taxes that have anything to do with funding schools unless it was okayed by the local school board and done by the local school board, because the state will be out of that and will be funding it separately. And again, Catherine, we're just looking at this. We're looking for input. We're looking for ideas. I want the legislative leaders to participate in this. I want them to look at this.
If this is such a good idea, why haven't we done it before?
Well, I haven't been here before. I don't know. It's been talked about, Catherine, for a long time. I mean, this is not a new idea. It's just that no one's been bold enough to take an initiative on it.
Well, now, let's talk about the last time something bold was done with tax reform, that Minnesota miracle, mm-hmm. 1971, when you're proposing that everything be shifted to the state, and that was when a large chunk, that's how we got up pretty much to that 70%, that first move from property taxes to the state. And then, of course, if you follow the course of history, by the 80s, we had deficits, we had problems. Mm-hmm. What's to say that won't happen with this?
Well, we're going to hopefully ensure it doesn't happen. We'll do our homework, and we'll make sure that that a situation like that wouldn't arise.
Now,
and again, this isn't written in stone. This is not like everyone wants specifics from me. I don't have specifics yet. This is just the idea we've come up with, and I have told my key commissioners this is a focus I want you to focus on, and so they're doing their jobs and they're focusing on it.
Now, does this mean that we would have even more statewide education policy? I mean, once you guys are writing the ticket for all the basics.
I don't think so. We're already statewide testing.
Well, I guess that's
we're
what I'm
already,
saying is...
No, I don't think it would be an increase in state... I mean, we already require testing to get a diploma now, which I agree with. I think that there should be a bar there. You know, many, many years now, we had kids graduating that couldn't read or write. They were literally shuttled through the system. Well, let's get them in and get them out. They're a problem kid, maybe this and that, whatever it might be. So you got kids out there for years that were getting diplomas that didn't earn them. Well, now they have to take an exam to earn them. Yes, we had a problem with it. Sure, everyone's human. Things are, you know, there'll be problems on everything you do in life. But I believe there should be a standard to get that diploma. And so, no, it's not going to take away from the local jurisdiction. In fact, I think it'll make the locals more accountable.
I was just going to say, well, let's talk for a minute about how this, if the state picks up the tab, then this somehow keeps locals still in power, grants them more power. I mean, you're talking accountability.
Locals can still do their own bonding. Locals will still do, nothing will change on that aspect, except the fact that, as we look at it now, that the state would pick up 100% funding of per pupil education.
Why do you want to reform Minnesota's tax system?
Have you picked up your property tax statement, Catherine? Do you own a home?
Yes.
Have you looked at it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand it?
Yes, I do, as a matter
really?
Of fact.
Really? Well, it would take someone, Catherine, of your intelligence and intellect, who would sit at home and really study this thing.
Saturday night, Governor.
top to bottom. Because I think the average homeowner, and I'll include myself, when that property tax statement comes, you look at it and you go, what in the heck is this? What is that? What is this? And inherently, I think the whole property tax system, if you want to go to a bigger issue, is wrong.
Okay.
I think we need to look at why do we tax according to the value of your home? We should be taxing according to the goods and services received. And it doesn't make any difference whether that home's expensive or cheap. It still receives the same goods and services from the local units of government, fire protection, police protection, the streets get plowed. That, in essence, is what your property taxes are supposed to be paying for.
Now, I know that you are a proponent of putting taxes onto the sales tax, putting the onus onto the sales tax instead of a property tax reform.
I personally like sales taxes because then you choose to pay tax by what you buy.
So,
you know, and if you don't want to buy anything, you don't have to pay taxes.
Is that one of the other reforms that this property tax reform would engender?
Well, one thing we're going to look at is that in the sales tax, initially the sales tax was based upon 60% goods, 40% services when it was first enacted. Well, now the role has switched. Now out in the world, the economy has changed. We're much more service-oriented economy today. 60% is now services, 40% is now goods. So those two roles have reversed themselves. And so inherently our sales tax is not hitting as much as it used to. Because of the economy and how lives have changed from a goods and services mentality out there.
What kind of an increase of a sales tax do you think we'd be looking at?
Well, what you have to look, and I'm not saying it will increase. Again, let mm-hmm. me be clear. We're just studying it. We're just going to look at this. We're going to look at doing it. But the sales tax right now, we have one of the highest in the country of sales tax, but it's one of the most narrow in scope. Now, you could actually lower the sales tax if you spread it out to more things. We're also looking at that as part of this equation. Because you have all the service industry does not pay a sales tax for, you know, the use, for their services. And as I said earlier, we've now gone to a 60-40 where before it used to be reversed. Goods were 60, services were 40, now they're reversed. Services are 60, goods are 40.
I want to get back to a minute to this changing the way we fund schools. Do you think this would lead to statewide collective bargaining for teachers?
Well, that's something that's been talked about, too, you know, that of allowing the teachers. It's another thing, you know, down the road that I'd like to look at, too, is why do we have so many school districts?
Well, we've been decreasing our number of school districts.
Exactly.
Do you think we're going to have more consolidation?
Well, maybe what we should look at is having school districts. This is just I'm throwing it out there for thought. Maybe school districts should be equal to the counties. That would be a simplified way to do it. Each county is a school district. But it isn't that way right now. And school districts have been getting, decreasing. Maybe it's the natural trend. And then people talk about, if you do that, you're actually going to decrease government if you do that. Because government is at many layers. You've got many, multiple layers of government. And if you decrease school districts and, say, hypothetically, had each district be its own equal to the county, well, that would reduce the size of government, too.
Let's say I'm a citizen out there. I'm really involved in my school district, and I hear about all these changes. And what I hear is more state-run, more state-control, more state bureaucracy of my school district.
No. All you hear from is that we're going to pick up the tab. We're going to simplify it.
Oh, but, Governor, you know as well as I do, you follow the money. And then
sure, you follow
out
the money, but you're following it already. The state's paying for 70% right now. It'd be an increase of 30. All it's going to do is make accountability. It's going to make the school districts accountable for whatever additional spending goes on. They will then be the ones accountable to their local people.
All right, Governor, let's go to some calls. We are talking to Governor Jesse Ventura about his sweeping tax reform program that he proposed over the weekend. Still filling in the details. We'd like you to fill in some of those details. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. What do you make of the idea of having states pick up the total tab for our school districts, removing the onus from property taxpayers, moving it over to the state? 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. We're going to go to Leanna in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello, good morning.
Hi.
I have often thought that the way that public schools are funded through property taxes was inherently unfair to communities with lower incomes and lower property values. So the idea of state funding is attractive. However, I want to know, would this make city schools equal to suburban schools? Just when you walk inside, say, South High, and then you go into a suburban school, the difference is stark. Whether or not the school is spending more money, the city schools are inarguably inferior. Would this system of funding make the schools equal?
I don't know. It would make them certainly... it would still be the result of your local school boards. You know, this is just us picking up the tab of funding the per-pupil education. And I think people at South High would beg to differ from you of saying that they are somehow inept and less good than the suburban schools, because I've been over to South High and I find their students over there exceptionally intelligent. They're What is that called when they're the school of the district where everyone wants to go in the open enrollment?
Star school.
Well, whatever it is.
Magnet
or whatever. Yeah, Salsa Magnet school. Yeah, well, Salsa Magnet school. So, you know, I would beg to differ with the caller of saying that somehow South High School students aren't receiving as good a education as those are in the suburbs are.
Well, perhaps, Leanna, did you talk about just level of equipment, not the quality of the students, but just the quality of the resources?
Well, actually, I'm not talking about the students at all. I'm talking about the books, the teachers. I had the opportunity to go to South High as a student, and then I attended St. Paul Academy. Obviously, the difference, I mean, there's a stark difference there because SPA is a private school. But I also toured some suburban schools, and I noticed that the schools are a lot cleaner. They have newer equipment. Students could take books home. When I went to South High, I couldn't take home my chemistry book because there weren't enough. And that was like 8 years ago.
Okay.
I don't know that it's changed. But however the resources are distributed, the city schools don't have the same resources in the school. They don't have the same amount of books. They don't have as much equipment, newer computer labs, the library.
And yet what's amazing about the situation is there's more money spent per pupil on the city schools than there are the suburban ones.
Why do you think that is, Governor?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. We're going to find out.
We're going to go to Laura in Minneapolis. Laura, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Governor Ventura just brought up a point that I think is real key, and that's that throwing money at schools has been shown over and over again not to solve any of the problems that many of them have. And while I think, too, like the previous caller, that there is real inequity between schools and the education that kids are offered based on where they live, unfortunately, I don't think that kicking the money upstairs to the state level is going to improve anything at all. Whenever you start adding layers of bureaucracy, more and more of the money ends up getting lost.
This isn't adding a layer of bureaucracy. It's actually going to reduce a layer of bureaucracy because the state will then pick up the full freight on it rather than the 70% they're paying now, and the additional 30 is left to the local unit of government. This will simply be the state paying for the per pupil across the state of Minnesota equally and fairly, and the local jurisdictions will still be able to do everything they've always done in the past. What this is more about is accountability, of simply knowing then from this point on it's the local district that has picked up the tab. The state picks it up per pupil formula, 100%. Anything additional that would appear on your local property tax form, you then would absolutely know that was the work of the local school district. That's why it's on there, because there would be no other school tab put on your local property taxes.
Is there any...
And property taxes would drop significantly. They would drop a great deal, but then again, it would have to be made up somewhere else. It's the rearranging or the changing of the tax system. It doesn't necessarily mean more or less.
How do you reassure someone who looks at the fact that now we have statewide standards, now we have the profile of learning, how do you tell them that there isn't going to be an ever-increasing statewide control of education? Because I think a lot of people hear standards, they hear control. They hear money, they hear control.
Well, because what you do is you still leave the creativity and how it's taught at the local level. State standards are merely to say you're getting a diploma that has the stamp of approval of the state of Minnesota on it. That when you go out into the business community or when you graduate, you're going out to get a job, you have to produce that diploma. We want that diploma to mean something. We want an employer out there to know that if this child has this diploma, this child has at least passed the minimum requirements to receive it. And that they showed that by taking an exam or a test that shows that they are, that they paid attention, they listened to their teachers, they can read and write, they can do the basic essentials to pass this test, just so that the diploma has meaning. Otherwise, as I said before this went into play, you had kids graduating that were being shuttled through the system, getting diplomas, who couldn't read or write. And what happens then? What does that do to the child who has earned that diploma? The child that can and did their work? When the two diplomas, if two people show up at a place of work with the same diploma, one can do it, the other can't. Well, the employer doesn't know that.
We're going to go to Mike in St. Louis Park. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Governor, really interested in your plan. Two questions about the accountability. One relates to the financing. On the one hand, you say that the state will pick up 100% of the cost, but the local district can still enhance that with their own, which tells me there's not 100%.
Secondly, they can do that right now. They can do that right now. There's
in which
no
case,
change
I'm wondering,
there.
But since that's the case, then I don't know what the difference would be with your plan.
Well,
the second aspect is, again, back to something that Catherine mentioned earlier about following the funds. When you talk about having the state guarantee, if you will, the meaning of the diploma, that tells me, particularly if we're talking about 100% of the dollars coming from the state, and you emphasize with that will come accountability, I assume that means the accountability will have to be for the state expectations, which tells me greater state control.
Well, you've got that already. We're not changing it. You have to pass your graduation standards. You have to pass your exams right now. That's not going to change. You have that whether we're paying 70% or whether we're paying 100. You have the same thing in place.
But then if we're saying that there's no change in the amount of accountability to the local district, if the local district can do the same thing financially and there's no increase in state control, then I guess I don't understand what the basic intent of the plan is.
The basic intent of the plan is to make it clear and simplify it over what your local boards are doing so that you as a citizen are very clear that when you get your property tax statement, if there's anything on that statement that deals with funding of schools, then that was the result of your local school board. Right now, it's very, it's a mess. You don't know who funded what.
We're going to go to Joe in Prior Lake. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you very much. I'm a real estate agent, and I think this is a phenomenal plan. I am seeing my clients literally being taxed out of their homes, and I think transferring this over towards a usage tax where people who spend their money indeed are showing an ability to be able to pay this type of a tax is great, and I really hope that you can get this through, because our property taxes right now are indeed unfair. They're simply based on a value of their home that is continually being inflated, and people on fixed incomes, I'm telling you, they are hurting, and they're going to hurt a lot more as we see our property values increase.
I would agree with you. That's one of the reasons. It's a quagmire. It's a mess when you look at the property tax system, and as he said, it's inherently very unfair, because you're paying right now for schools, you're paying for services like fire, your roads to be plowed, police protection. Why should it be, you know, when you look at the big picture, what does the value of your house have to do with that? Nothing. It's got to do with, I would see, if you want to look at a broad picture and something really sweeping for property taxes, I think that they should actually go by how many feet of property you have, not the value of your property, but how many feet you have, so that if you own three lots and you're requiring that much more plowing services in the winter or whatever, that would be a far more equitable and fair way to do property taxes.
We're talking with Governor Jesse Ventura about his ideas for tax reform, the main one he proposed on Sunday, switching the bill for our schools from property taxpayers to the state. If you would like to join our conversation, it's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. Of course, a little later in this hour, we're hoping to talk to him about his new book, Do I Stand Alone? Going to the Mat Against Political Pawns and Media Jackals at 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. We're going to turn now to Stephen John. He's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.
Good morning. Baseball great Daryl Strawberry is getting 2 years of house arrest for driving under the influence of medication and leaving the scene of an accident. He pleaded guilty in Tampa, Florida today, saying he blacked out from prescription medication. Strawberry at one time played briefly for the St. Paul Saints minor league team. Transportation Secretary Rodney Slater is expected this morning at a Senate panel investigating the Firestone tire recall case. He's been criticized for not testifying earlier. So far, 6.5 million tires have been recalled. The government wants that number increased. The Federal Election Commission is meeting today to decide who gets the $12.6 million earmarked for the Reform Party. Both Pat Buchanan and his rival John Hagelin claim to be the party's real presidential candidate this year. It is Election Day in Minnesota, and voters will decide the winner of the most expensive primary fight in state history. Four prominent DFLers are vying to challenge Republican Senator Rod Grams in November. The polls are open until 8 o'clock tonight. The AAA says the intersection of Interstate Highway 35W and Crosstown Highway 62 in Minneapolis is one of the worst bottlenecks in the country. The group says that for 14 hours a day, the interchange carries more traffic than it was designed for. And a new study says a higher percentage of Minnesota children are home alone than their counterparts in the rest of the country. In Minnesota, 17% of 6 to 9-year-olds are without adult supervision when they are not in school. Nationally, 10% of children that age were home alone. The forecast calling for partly to mostly sunny conditions statewide today, highs in the mid-60s to middle-70s. For the Twin Cities, mostly sunny with a high near 72 degrees. Westerly winds at 10 to 15 miles an hour, down to 50 tonight, and highs tomorrow in the upper 70s. Around the state now, it's 48 degrees in International Falls, 54 in Marshall, 53 in Rochester, and 51 in Duluth. The Twin Cities has 54 degrees. That's news. I'm Stephen John.
Tuesday, September 12th, primary day in Minnesota. After you wait in line, go online for the latest election results. MinnesotaPublicRadio.org will provide constantly updated election results. You can listen to and watch Minnesota Public Radio's election night broadcast, leave comments about the campaign in the NPR forum, and as the results are known, we'll open an NPR polling area to register your choices for the November election. Visit the Campaign 2000 section at MinnesotaPublicRadio.org.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. Want to remind you, a few minutes after 10, we'll be talking about that new FTC report that charges the entertainment industry, the makers of video games, movies, and music, of taking mature material, R-rated material, and deliberately marketing it to kids. We'll be talking to Daphne White. She's the executive director of the Lion and Lamb Project, an organization which monitors children's programming for violent content. You don't want to miss that conversation. Of course, you don't want to miss this conversation either. We're continuing our talk with Governor Jesse Ventura about his ideas for tax reform. A little later, we'll talk to him about his new book. If you want to join the conversation, lines are full right now. Take down this number. Maybe you can get in a few minutes later. 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. Governor?
Yes, Catherine. I would like to expand, too, that right now, you know, the 30% that we mandate, we pay for 70, and then the locals get the other 30. Well, the state already mandates to the locals what they'll do and how they'll spend that 30%. It's already done. And so what happens is the local board on the levy per pupil, the 30%, then the districts often get to shirk responsibility because they can then point to the state and say, well, the state mandates us to do this. What we're doing is taking away the shell game. We're taking all 100% so you know that this is what the state does and anything else is what the locals do.
Well, is there going to be anything else left if you mandate the 30 and you already,
We're already doing it.
But I guess that's
it's 100 right now. Exactly. And what we want to do is why pay for just 70 and mandate the other 30? Let's have the state, since they're already controlling 100% of that money to begin with, let's make it accountable on both sides.
See, now we use that pesky word control. If they're already controlling 70% of it, when we add
No, we're controlling 100.
That's my point. But
we're controlling 100 right now.
Control is
Catherine,
the word.
We're doing it right now.
Oh, I know. But I guess what I'm saying is a lot of people controlling money means controlling curriculum, controlling the way you teach. I think that word control.
Well, then what's the difference? We're doing it right now.
If you're controlling all the money, how does that allow local districts accountability and their own control?
Because if we take 100% and say we're paying for 100%, then from that point on, any additional money that is used in schools will be clearly the result of the local jurisdiction. Right now, the locals can often escape responsibility by pointing fingers at the state and say, well, we can't do anything about it because the state tells us what to do with this 30% anyway.
We're going to go to Rick in Minneapolis. Rick, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Morning.
Hi.
I was doing some rough figures. I live in Brooklyn Park, former home of the mayor. I pay about $1,500 in real estate taxes. If I were to save a few hundred bucks, I would have to, according to the plan, as I understand it, it would be shifted to sales tax, let's say, by just one example, clothing and food. I'd have to spend thousands more, in my case, about $10,000 more on clothing and food, and I don't spend nearly that.
Who said it's going to clothing and food? When did I ever make that statement this morning?
Okay.
I've never stated that it would be shifted onto clothing and food. So no, I haven't said that.
Well, I've read that in a newspaper.
Wait a minute. If you read that in a newspaper, rest assured it is probably not factual. This is a good transition to my book.
Well, your book's not factual either. You have admitted that.
No, I haven't. Where have I admitted my book's not factual?
Well, you said that there's exaggerations in your book.
No, I didn't.
You know,
when did I say that?
Your general philosophy seems to be here that you can do anything you want.
No, you're shifting everything.
From the wealthy to the middle class. And that's all you ever want to do, Governor, is shift the burden from the wealthy to the middle class.
All right,
that's
Rick,
all you've ever wanted
let's
to do.
Let him have a chance to respond now.
Well, I don't know exactly where he's coming from on that, because first of all, he put words in my mouth when he said that we'd be now taxing food and clothing. And I said, where did you get that from? He said, I read it in the paper. Well, then hold the paper responsible for that, because I have never once said that there would be any shift to taxing food and clothing. We're simply looking at assuming 100% of funding for schools in the state of Minnesota, which we already pay 70%, and we mandate the remaining 30%. What we're talking about is simply ending the shell game and being straight up and straightforward of saying, yes, the state picks up 100% and is responsible for such.
All right, Governor, you mentioned that now might be a good time to transition for at least a few minutes of conversation about your book.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we do want to make sure that we go back to chats about reform. One of the things that struck me that when, you know, you just said, well, if it's in the paper, it seemed like you were heading toward a path of criticism about newspaper coverage. And one question I had for you is, it seems as if when you talk about the press, you also use it interchangeably with the media, as if columnists and people who make made-for-TV bio movies and beat reporters and talk show hosts are all the same. Is that how you see the press?
No, not always. There's different facets to the press, but they're all part of the media.
All right.
They're all part of what people listen to and what people gain their information from on a daily basis.
Well, it just strikes me that obviously when you generalize about anything, you get into dicey territory.
Sure.
All right, so...
Books should get into dicey territory.
Okay, well
it's
then...
It's to provoking thoughts.
All right.
To make you think. To make you maybe look at something and reassess what you're getting. And my book is really about, don't take literally everything you get from the media as being factual, that it's had the proper reporting done, that both sides of the story are being told. You have to be intelligent as a reader on where you gain your knowledge from and how you base your opinions from that knowledge you've gained. And that's what my book is about, is be a little more insightful. Don't just take verbatim because you read something in the paper that it's a fact or true, because it isn't always the case.
When you were a commercial talk show host,
mm-hmm.
How did you avoid becoming a media jackal?
I probably was a little bit. I think it's all part of the territory. And it's all part of what the... I think part of it, too, is what is the show about to begin with? Is the show about entertaining? Or is the show supposedly to give thoughtful news broadcasts? You know, are they there to give information or are they there to entertain? And there's a line between the two, entertaining and giving out information. And I think that line is becoming far and far more erased, to where we're not sure what we're getting, entertainment or factual news. Factual news doesn't get you rating points. Factual news doesn't make you money. Entertaining does. And so you're seeing a shift in the way news is delivered and the way it's reported and the way everything about it towards the entertainment side. I see it that way anyway.
Do you think if we have that same line between entertainment and politics?
Do we have that same line? I don't know.
I mean, is that line shifting? I'm just wondering if we see entertainment creep not only in the media but in the political spectrum.
Oh, I think so, sure. You're seeing it now. I mean, remember when I participated in pro wrestling, how I was chastised? I was told, this is unfit for a governor to do this. This is horrible. Why is our governor involved in this? And lo and behold, hardly less than a year later, you have professional wrestlers speaking at the Republican National Convention and being asked to come there by a vice presidential nominee. I call that a double standard. I call that a bit of hypocrisy, where the same people that criticize me... Let's take it even a step further, Catherine. You had Governor Bush utter some unsavory words the other day about a reporter, right? And in the heat of battle, when I refereed a wrestling match where I had no idea there were boom mics that were recording what was going on, I had less of an idea there were mics there than Governor Bush did. Governor Bush could see the mics. They were right in front of him. Now, whether he knew they were on or off, he had no way of knowing. He probably assumed they were off when they were on. In my case, I had no idea there were mics at all. I threw the particular Vince McMahon son over the top rope, and I uttered a few unsavory words to him. And yet right away it was, my goodness, how could the governor speak this way? How could he say those words? Da-da-da-da-da-da. Well, the same people that criticized me are now calling Governor Bush a real person. He's real.
Well, because, not Governor, people have praised you for your genuine quality.
I know that, but what I'm saying, you're following what I'm saying, Catherine, is that the same people who laid this heavy criticism on me, when it happens to one of their own, the story switches, the field changes, and all of a sudden now it's a real thing. And let's remember, I did mine in the case of a pro wrestling match. The governor did his on a speaking tour, I think they're a little two different venues.
You know, I want to get back to your book for a minute.
Okay, sure.
We have quotes in here from Disraeli. There's in the reading list, it says to look at Elizabeth Drew, the former New Yorker's book on the corruption of American politics. When did you have time to do all this reading? And Disraeli, who knew?
Well, certainly there's also another person there, said also written by Ms. Mooney, Julie Mooney.
Yeah, she's in the acknowledgement.
Sure. No, right? No, she's in the front of the book. She's there. No, I worked with her. She also did my first book with me. Certainly you don't write a book alone. Anyone that tells you they do today, I would question their credibility. You have people that work with you on books, and I make no bones about it. When did I have time to do it? I generally work on those books at 7 o'clock at night to 10 o'clock at night, when I do them. And they take a period of a number of months. I mean, it's something you don't do over the course of, well, let's work 4 days here and get a book done and we'll fire it out. No. It takes a lot of months, and on weekends. On weekends, on Sunday afternoons or in the evening or whatever, you'll work on a book like that. But I certainly am not going to tell you that Julie didn't play a great role in the book. Absolutely, she does.
Governor, before we go back to calls on tax reform, it struck me that while a lot of the attention has been focused on your discussion of politics and on the fun you have with the media, the point of your book is voter apathy.
Yes, it is.
Why do you think that isn't getting discussed as much?
Oh, because of the title. When you look at the title of the book, you see political pawns and media jackals, and right away the media takes offense to it, and they want to defend themselves.
Offense? And people love this. Give me a break.
Well, no,
Ron Williams
media
wants to know if he's a media jackal. You have national public radio.
But, it is. The true essence of the book is to shake up America and say, hey, let's wake up here. Our democracy is the greatest in the world. We are the best in the world. And yet, less than 50% of us are voting, and the trend is going down. It's getting worse. That troubles me a great deal. And that's one of the major reasons I wrote the book. I want to shake people up and say, hey, you're getting what you're getting because you're allowing it to happen.
All right.
You're accepting what you're being spoon-fed. You shouldn't do that.
So why doesn't this book say, going to the mat against political pawns, media jackals, and apathetic, you fill in the blank?
Well, because you don't have enough space on a cover to write all
of
that.
Oh, I don't know. There's a lot of space.
Well, come on. As well as I do, you put a title, you put a subtitle, and you move on from there.
Now, is the Ventura Foundation, the Jade Foundation, going to come up with buttons for sale that say, I am a media jackal?
No, I doubt it.
I think you could have a lot of sales. We're going to go to Ryan in Ham Lake. Ryan, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Okay, I just have a question for the governor. What's going to stop the local governments from just raising property taxes over the next 10 years, and then we'll be sitting with the same property taxes and then higher sales tax?
Well, you can stop them.
How can I do that?
You vote them out of office if they do that. They'll be accountable.
No,
I don't know as well. The easy way for citizens to control their government is to vote. And that is the pure way that it was made that way by the forefathers of our country, is that you have the ultimate power. If you don't want Jesse Ventura to be the governor, you vote Jesse Ventura out of office. If you don't want if that local school board person doesn't do what you feel is the right thing to do at your local level, you vote that person out of office. That's how the system works, and that's the game or the field that it has to be played upon.
Okay, can I ask you a question, though?
Sure.
Just because, I mean, how come the situation is the way that it is right now? We've always had the opportunity to vote these people out of office, but property taxes continue to go up. And the situation isn't going to change. Property taxes are going to go back up, and we're just going to end up having a tax increase out of this. That's what I think.
Well, I don't see where you say that, because we're already paying 100%. We're mandating it. We're providing 70, we're mandating the other 30, we're telling them exactly what they have to spend it on. All this is going to simply do is put it to where it belongs of accountability and say, since the state government mandates 100% of the per pupil funding anyway, let's put it all to the state and make them accountable, and then anything beyond that, the locals are accountable for. It's going to make it much simpler for you to understand. I guess the argument against would be, well, I'm happy in my bliss of not knowing. Is that the argument back to me? That I'd rather not know? I'd rather keep it very complicated and spin it around and play the shell game, and then that way I'm happy in my ignorance, I guess. Well, I'm not that way. I don't like being happy in ignorance. I would rather be happy with knowledge and knowing what's going on.
We're going to go to Nancy in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Nancy.
I'd like to say that I'm basically very much in favor of this reform idea. As a taxpayer, I guess I'm less concerned about the tax reform element of it, but as someone who works with children, I think that the educational funding reform is a really wonderful idea. I think that it will provide for equity for educational services for all Minnesota students. Over the years that I've worked with children, I've seen some very difficult decisions forced upon school districts. Referendums are voted down by property taxpayers, especially in communities with large numbers of people who are on fixed incomes, like senior citizens or rural communities.
Yep.
And I really think that this could equalize the funding for all students. I'd also like to think that this would enable the statewide to capture more federal funds more efficiently as we take over the funding of schools. And that would include special education funding. Hope you'll also consider supporting Mark Dayton's idea to pass federal legislation so that 90% of the special education funds are covered by the special education by federal government.
First of all, let me say something. Mark Dayton's taking my idea.
Okay, well, it's a great idea.
Thank you, because that was one of the things I met with Vice President Gore on when he was here in town, and it's one of the things that Angus King, the independent governor of Maine, and I have been out in Washington at all the NGA conferences railing and pounding desks on. We've always maintained, you know, this was something mandated by the federal government. They agreed to pay 40% of special ed. They've only reached 11%, so they're down 29% to what they should be paying us. The ending result could be $250 million roughly of more money we would have available for regular education if the feds would pay their end of the bargain that they promised to do 30 years ago and have never done it. So rest assured, and Mark, I'm not angry at Mark for doing it. I'm pleased he's doing it, because the more people that get on board with this, and the more, you know, saber rattling and table pounding that we do, the more it'll get done. So I compliment Mark Dayton for following through on my initiative and continuing to take it out there into the public arena during this fall's election.
We've got Barbara in Monticello. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Governor.
Good morning.
Actually, I'm from St. Louis, but I'm just visiting here. I'm going to a convention. But some of the same issues that you've been talking about this morning as far as, like, property taxes, et cetera, and talking about people, like, on fixed incomes, and I agree, you can vote out your elected officials. I happen to be one in St. Louis in a suburb. Could you give an example of how this would impact, let's say a home is valued at $100,000?
Well, I don't have figures in front of me right now, but it would be quite substantial, because right now on your property taxes, it's a very large chunk of that property tax that goes to fund education. So it could be, I don't know, I'd hate to throw out something, because you know I'll be held accountable for what I say. So rather than telling you, you know, a third, a quarter, a half, or whatever it might be, I would simply rather just leave it at it would be a quite substantial amount.
We're going to go to Rick, calling us from Sunrise. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, Governor.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm a member of our local school board, and we're a third-tier school district. So we're one of those districts that really feels the, you know, most of our homeowners work in the cities, mm-hmm. so we're a low property tax district. We don't have a lot of industrial base. And I think that this is something that, you know, in brainstorming, we've talked about, you know, what would happen if we had statewide funding.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that would answer the equity question in the state of Minnesota pretty nicely. I guess one of my questions would be is if there would continue to be a limit or a cap on what an operating levy could be set at. So if you do go to your voters and ask them to support you beyond the state formula.
Sure. And again, those are questions we're going to look at. I don't have an answer for you today, Rick. It's, you know, we've just put it out there now. We're looking for feedback, much as you're giving me right now. We're going to look for feedback from our legislators, our leaders in both parties, Senator Moe and Speaker Svigum. But we just want it out there. We want it out on the table. We want to take a hard look at it. And I've got my commissioners looking at it. And I think that's what the state has hired us to do. It's certainly a candidate like me who came in, I'll use the term because I'm no longer a member, but a candidate who came in talking reform. And this is reform. And so I think I'm doing what I promised to do when I ran for governor, is that look at new ways, look out of the box, look at things the way they maybe haven't been looked at for a while. If we determine it's a bad idea, well, we tried, we looked at it, and we'll move on.
And if I could make one more other point,
sure.
And that's, I think, you know, in farm country and where they're always the farm economy up and down so much that, you know, pulling that portion off of their taxes would be very beneficial to them, and also for people on fixed incomes. Their value of their homes are going up, yet their income is still the same.
Yep.
So I think it would be a fair system, maybe all the way around for everyone.
Yeah, I think, well, that's what we're going to look at. Making, you know, no one likes to pay taxes. Believe me, I don't either. I have to do it. There isn't anyone. You know, the old saying, death and taxes, the two things you know, that are inevitable in life. No one likes to pay taxes, but you do like to think they're fair and equitable, that it can be the fairest it can possibly be, so that everyone's paying their fair share or carrying their end of the log, if you want to put it that way, so that it's all, and that's what we're trying to do here, look at a situation that makes the taxing system more fair and more equitable.
I know that your revenue commissioner has had hearings around the state,
and
public
is doing
meetings.
Them right now.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, because there's more coming up, are you going to be appearing at any of these?
Right now, I don't know. You know, there's a lot of, my table's pretty full right now, but certainly if Commissioner Smith asked me to attend them, I certainly will.
We're going to go to Rob in Pine River. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Governor.
Hi, Rob.
I have a question here as far as, I find this very exciting and refreshing what you're proposing for 100% coverage by the state. This past year, we had a referendum on the ballot for a $12 million improvement to the school, and it suffered a crushing defeat by a vote in the city. Now, how will the school districts be able to get these funds if they're put to a vote and the citizens vote them down? Will they have to solicit the state for the monies for improvements?
No, I don't think so. See, what we would be covering is the per pupil formula, which we already do. We pay 70% of it now, and then we mandate the other 30 and tell the locals how they got to spend it anyway. All we're simply doing is saying we will take the full 100%, we will pay the full 100%, and that frees it off the property tax rolls, which will subsequently drop property taxes pretty drastically. Now, in light of that, if your locals want to then do a bonding issue and property taxes have been dropped so substantially, it could prove that people are more susceptible to help pass bonding because they're not being killed on their property taxes to the level that they are today. So it could open up those doors, but ultimately then you end up paying more taxes in the long run, be it sales or wherever else it's shifted to.
We're going to go to Chris in Bemidji. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning, Governor.
Good morning, Chris.
I guess the way I see it, two different ways. There's more people out there paying sales tax in Minnesota than there is property tax. So if you went to the sales tax, it would actually cut down on Minnesota's burden because you have all the people coming in from other states.
Sure.
So it would cut down the burden a little bit there. As far as taking a dime out of our pockets, it doesn't really matter to me which pocket you take it out of, as long as I understand what's going on a little bit.
Exactly. Accountability. You and I see eye to eye on this. I understand I'm going to pay taxes. I just want to know why and from where it's coming from and that I can have a clear view of it.
We're going to go to Nancy in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning. Hello, Nancy. All right, looks like we lost Nancy. Well, in the time that we have remaining, Governor, today is primary day. Obviously, we don't want you to give your imprimatur on any candidate, but we don't expect a great turnout today, and the point of your book is voter apathy.
Yeah, it really is. Well, it's apathy in government, not just voter apathy. It's apathy in getting involved, that if you sit back on your hands and don't get involved, then you're going to be fed what other people want to feed you. So it's about activism, it's about voting, it's about doing things at the local level, being involved and not accepting what you read in the paper as total factual truth, but going out and seeking the truth and knowing where to go to get it. In the book you'll find I give a formula of how to feed your way through what you're reading through political candidates and the rhetoric that they say and what they talk about, and it's kind of a good way. Maybe you can sit down as a handbook a little bit when you hear these speeches and you hear the things that go on in politics, of being able to judge what is the person actually telling me, you know, when they say this. Because how many of us, Catherine, have sat through a political speech and you hear a question asked of a candidate and you hear a 3-minute reply, and when they're done with that reply, you turn to the person next to you and you go, what did he say?
Now, did that happen this morning?
Did it? I hope not. I hope that it didn't. You know, I try to answer as honestly as I. That's why I never go off notes too often, you know, because, if it did, I hope that it didn't, because I want to be as forthcoming as I possibly can be.
All right, Governor, I want to thank you for coming by this morning.
Is Gary your next guest?
Gary and I are going to chit-chat about the next day.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, you old radio professional, you know better than that. All right, thanks for coming
thank
by,
Thank you,
Governor.
Catherine. Have a good one.
All
and
right.
Don't forget to vote.
Ilona Benson on the next All Things Considered. Soybean farmers face a new challenge, the aphid.
Soybean has been a crop for us. We haven't had to monitor for insects. We haven't had to treat with insecticides. There are about 7 million acres of soybeans in the state of Minnesota, and with this pass, we face the potential of seeing a significant number of those acres need to be treated with an insecticide.